and gentlemen.
This is The Public Square.
All right, welcome back to the Public Square, and on your number one talk news and sports station, I am Aogo Obu. And apologies, appears we have some technical issues, so I cannot play back excerpts of Rotimi's presentation at the Security Summit. But what we are going to do is just go through some of the fine talking points so we can have our Security Summit on Public Square, the revised version. So I think Rotimi's online. Hello, Rotimi. Okay, I'll try and do that as quickly as possible so he can join the conversation. So remember, you can always join us on Public Square on social media. Also, you can join us. That's at Public Square NG at Nigeria Info FM, at Rotimi Sankore, at Aogo Obu. Any of these handles, would love to hear from you. And also remember that you can join the conversation on WhatsApp. It's 0809-597-5805. Again, 0809-597-5805. So, we have Rotimi now. Hello, Rotimi.
Yeah, hello.
Excellent. So, it's another day at the Public Square. And so we can have a look at the discussion. Just again to apologize to the listeners that they we can't sort of play out excerpt of the summit on your presentation on the summit on policy as well as what to do connecting the dots between development and insecurity.
No problem. I think, I mean, although as you've explained, for technical reasons,
right,
we are unable to play back the content from the summit. Can I just urge that listeners, if you follow me on social media, at Rotimi Sankore on Twitter especially, we'll put up clips of the content of the Security Summit. And if you join Sheriff on Morning Crossfire on Monday morning, he is likely to have it for you as well. But if you want to watch the video, you know, you can look at it on social media, on Twitter especially, at Rotimi Sankore, over the weekend on Monday, but you can listen to Sheriff on Monday morning. I think we have one or two clips up now,
right,
but we can put up more if you missed it and you haven't watched it on Facebook Live.
Excellent, excellent. So maybe, Rotimi, we'll just give the listeners an idea of the areas we can cover before they can come into the square, which will give them a fair idea before we go on this quick break on the things that you talked about during the summit.
Yes, well, I will try and summarize my developmental understanding of insecurity,
right,
as it stands in Nigeria, starting from the northeast and northwest, which is where, I mean, there are actual wars going on.
Mm.
I mean, I say there are actual wars because, battalions of the army have been deployed in Borno, Yobe, Katsina, Zamfara, Sokoto, Kebbi, Kaduna, possibly parts of Kano.
Mm.
We have 10 Tucano aircrafts that have been purchased, numerous helicopters. I mean, all kinds of assets have been deployed to fight the insecurity in northeast and northwest. And, you know, the summary of my presentation essentially was that while it is necessary to deploy the police, security forces, and the armed forces, we mustn't forget that the army is not a security force,
right,
neither is the Navy or the Air Force. They are trained for war.
Hmm.
They are armed forces. People often mistake it and say security forces, including the army, have been deployed. No. The armed forces have been deployed to support the security forces. And my take essentially is that making it a mainly military approach is not only wrong, but it will not solve the problem. And what I explained at the summit was at the height of the insurgency in northeast Nigeria, data from the Bureau of Statistics. So in other words, it's not hidden data. You don't have to go extra mile. The data from the Bureau of Statistics, the data from the states themselves, and then the data from the development agencies explain to us why the extremists were able to gain a foothold first in Yobe and Borno. And the summary is this. 6-7 years ago, the data was telling us that the reason Yobe and Borno were hotspots were, one, the collapse of the Chad region, and this is the pinned tweet on my Twitter handle.
Right.
If you have not seen it before, please go and look at it. You see how the Lake Chad collapsed over 4 decades from more or less ocean size to the size of a small river, which meant that all the economic activity around that place, fishing, farming, essentially had gone from 100% to 10%, and hundreds of thousands were thrown into unemployment. Alongside this, all the governors in northeast Nigeria, all historically failed to identify that problem and to understand that they had to invest in education to retool the population.
Right. All right, Richard.
And so you want to go on a break?
Yeah, we're going to go on a break now. So if we come back, we can continue from here.
Okay.
All right. 99.3 Nigeria Info. We will be right back to continue, Rotimi and I, on Public Square, looking at the developmental approach in resolving the security conflicts we face. Please stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Public Square.
All right, welcome back to the Public Square, 99.3 Nigeria Info, your number one talk news and sports station. I'm Aoro Obo, together with Rotimi Sankore, development and data expert. We are looking at the connection, the dots between the insecurity in the country and underdevelopment. And just before we went on the break, by the way, the background to this is the security summit, which happened on Saturday, commemorating Nigeria Info's 10th year anniversary. And we did one of the major events over the weekend, which was security summit together with the GX conference. But the security summit wrote to be spoke on, and we're looking at development policy options in resolving the security challenges we face. And before Rotimi went off, he talked about the government's approach in resolving the problem only from what you say, the kinetic or using weapons or the military option in resolving the problem, which he says, if you trace back to the Bureau of Statistics data over the years, it shows years of underdevelopment was the trigger for the crisis we see in the northeast and now the northwest also too. Rotimi, you're still with us?
Yes, please.
Good. So, so we continue, yes.
Yeah, so before the break, I was explaining that the collapse of Lake Chad was the first sign that there was going to be a crisis in the northeast. And that collapse started decades ago. And I was explaining that if people have not seen that collapse before, the satellite pictures, please look at the pinned tweet on my handle at Rotimi Sankore to really understand that it was possible to anticipate and mitigate, if not stop, this problem. I mean, that is how bad it is. That is how painful it is, because that satellite picture shows how from 1963, 1973, decade by decade, up to just before the insurgency kicked off, how effectively the collapse of fishing and farming created fertile ground by robbing hundreds of thousands of people of their means of livelihood, plunging the region into poverty. And this is on four sides of that border, in Nigeria, Niger, Chad, and Cameroon. So four countries had an opportunity to spot the potential of insecurity and instability, which could be harnessed by extremists, and did nothing. Nothing. Now, on the Nigerian side, the catastrophic failure is that the governors of the Northeast and Northwest, but especially in the Northeast, failed to spot the problem, which would have then catalyzed their investing in education to retool the people in that region. So to just to give an example of the historical size of the problem. So 6 years ago, myself and other colleagues in the demographic and data community, I mean, essentially under the umbrella of Africa Development Information, you know, we looked at the data and saw that the Bureau of Statistics, the state bureaus of statistics, or Population Commission, and the ministries all had the data that showed us that 6 to 7 years ago, in Yobe State, 83% of males had had zero access to education. 83% of males in Yobe, zero access to education. 63% of males in Borno, zero access to education. But to show you that it was not just the Northeast, so the warning signs for Northwest were that at that point in time, 6 years ago, we could see 57.4% of males in Sokoto, zero access to education. 59.9% of males in Katsina, zero access to education. 55.8% of males in Zamfara, zero access to education. We could see all that then. We went back 12 years because the UNESCO recommendation is everybody needs at least 12 years minimum of education.
Right.
6 years primary, 6 years secondary. So we went back 12 years. And at that time, the overall number of out-of-school children, not the grown-ups I just mentioned, children, was about 4.4 million in the Northwest, even higher than the Northeast, which at the time was just over 3 million, 12 years ago. Now we have overall 13 million children out of school, the majority in the Northeast and the Northwest. So if the governors in the Northeast and Northwest, even if not 30 years ago, 20 years ago, had been working on the data, in the Northeast especially, they would have realized that the collapse of that Lake Chad and the hundreds of thousands that were going to lose their farming and fishing occupation, but has not had any education or job skills training, job skills.
Right.
It was time to start investing in, you know, so that it can help to retool. Now, percentages tell you a lot. They don't tell you everything. So I made the point at the summit that everybody is glad to hear that 8,000 Boko Haram extremists have surrendered. That is a lot. But go back 6 years ago, that 63% of males that have had no access to education in Borno State is 63% of 2.5 million males. 63% of 2.5 million males. Now, generally, the understanding is that to have an insurrection, banditry, or extremist movement of that size have an impact, you only need about 10-15% of those that are vulnerable to extremism. Mm. So, 10% of the 10% of 63% of 2.5 million. It gives you an idea. That is well over a million people 6 years ago vulnerable to extremism. Mm. If 10 to 15% of them, as is the global understanding, are sympathetic to and join, that is 150,000 plus. And if you remember that video that I put on my Twitter handle when Buratai was going through his ambassadorial screening,
right,
the former chief of staff, where he was then telling the National Assembly that the army alone cannot crush the insurgency, that there is need for social and human development. Mm. This is coming from Buratai. He didn't say it 10 years ago. He said it after he had retired. That was the shape of it. And he was telling the National Assembly, he said, and I'm quoting him now, including the inflections, the army alone cannot do it. They need education. They need jobs. They need schools. They need roads. They need water. Without all those things, the army cannot. And I said, oh, God, waiting now. You didn't say that before. So that investment could have been made. You kept on insisting they will be defeated next week. They will be defeated the week after. The new helicopters are arriving. They will be finished. The Minister of Information we support him, they've been decimated. They've been technically defeated. And they went on and on and on and on. Meanwhile, not even paying attention to the Northwest, where we could also see that data was going to cause problem. Remember what I said?
Right.
12 years ago, the Northwest had 4.4 million children out of school,
right,
more than in the Northeast.
Mm.
So in Katsina and Zamfara, so 59.9% of 1.9 million males had no education, no access to education. In Zamfara, 55.8% of 1.9 million males had no access to education. What did they think was going to happen? We are literally talking hundreds of thousands of people who have no education, no job skills, are vulnerable to hunger. Remember, Katsina has the highest hunger and malnutrition in the country,
right,
53%.
Right.
This is official government data, followed by Zamfara. So when you start adding those things together, out of school children, millions unable to read and write,
right,
poverty, hunger, malnutrition, fertility rates, and so forth like that, then you see where the problem is. No planning, no demographic understanding, nothing. Even if you want to look at it historically, you will see that the elite had no clue. So I remind people, not because I want to shade the current president, but to point out two things. One, that the military has no role in politics, because infantry and artillery soldiers are not trained for to develop countries. So President Buhari was the first military administrator of Northeast Nigeria. He was the first military governor of Borno State. So first, if he had spotted the opportunity then, he could have headed it off. He didn't. Because it's not his training. So you can see how that problem, now as president, essentially, he's having to send troops to quell decades of underinvestments in education, in job skills, in training, in infrastructure, not to mention the inequality, which is enabling the bandits and extremists to reproduce the gender inequality. Because as I always say, first child marriage is what has enabled the bandits and extremists to force girls into reproducing an army.
Absolutely, sir. Rotimi, we're going to
seven to eight children per girl or woman average.
Right.
In reality, about 12 children per girl or woman multiplied by polygamy.
Right. We're going to talk about...
most men, there are 24 to 32 children.
Right.
In poverty.
Right, so Rotimi,
let's... and bandits are having a field day.
So, Rotimi, we're going to go on a quick break. So we come back... we can then look at this population boom and the consequences on sustainable growth rate and what it means for health, education, and by and large, the insecurity that we face. 99.3 Nigeria Info, we will be right back.
Let me tell you about Public Square. There are several lines that meet other edges.
Youth of this country who are already in a disillusioned, disenchanted state will be encouraged.
Where we talk about the fine margin. Sometimes it's black, white, and blurry.
It's also informed by the need to save costs and reduce legislative time.
Then there are the actors right at the center, coming through political processes, which could be dramatic.
To the extent of this impeachment, if Parliament does not raise this money.
And controversial.
If driving through the roads is a getting the macabre dance. Compatibility is that of government.
And there's you to help connect the dots from the top to the bottom. Join Rotimi Sankore and Arogo Obo at the Public Square every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Public Square.
All right, welcome back. It's 3 minutes past five. Shaku Maku, Caleb from K2 says, for the first time, he says, Rotimi sounds emotional about the challenges of Nigeria. It's well or we commit Nigeria into the Almighty's hands. Tony from Birmingham in Alabama says, please permit me to use this platform to ask the Information Minister and the presidential spokesperson to please explain to Nigerians and the world at large the reason why the president finds it extremely difficult to name those terrorizing Nigerians as terrorists, even as the governor of Kaduna State, Malam El Nasser Rufai, was a close confidant of the president, just told the whole world recently of having advised the president as far back as 2017 to classify them as terrorists. I've taking your message, Tony from Birmingham, Alabama. 08095975805 is the number to send us messages on WhatsApp. It's Public Square together with Rotimi. We are looking at a number of issues on the sidelines of the Security Summit, which happened last week, which Rotimi was a distinguished speaker. So Rotimi, there's still more angles to branch in
yes.
This. Great. So we can continue from where we stopped.
Okay, so let me just summarize on Northeast and Northwest, you know, and just say, so recently, Governor of Kaduna, Errol Rufai, raised alarm and said that the North is about to turn into Afghanistan. Of course, he's right. You know, he's an intelligent guy. I mean, he recognizes the problem, but is he recognizing the solution? Often when the northern governors meet, they meet in Kaduna. Is he telling the northern governors that, guys, look, so this is the problem. That because of feudalism, because that is what it is, because of feudalism, historically, the governors, whether military or civilian, have failed to invest in the core development indicators that could have averted the Afghanistan scenario. We've talked about them. Because feudalism is another name for inequality. So feudalism failed to invest in education, in gender equality, you know, for girls to go to school, to abolish forced child marriage, to lower the fertility rates, to advise men against polygamy, and so forth like that. Feudalism failed to do all those things. So he and his colleagues are not owning the problem to say, historically, the current set of governors and our previous colleagues, which includes the current president, didn't recognize the problem. We now recognize it. We are now going to make that investment and hope it is going to work. Instead, they are relying mainly on military solution. Whereas the strategy should be more of, if they need the military, call in the military. The military clears an area, holds it, the rapid development investment goes into the place. A few months, 1 year, it improves, they move on. So capture, hold, invest, move on. Capture, hold, invest, move on. Failure to do that means that the military has become an army of occupation.
Right.
So they are there permanently in Borno, in Yobe, in Zamfara, in Katsina. And every time they keep telling us it's the final warning, they've been defeated. They will be crushed completely by next month. In fact, they won't know what hits them. Meanwhile, population keeps growing. The problem with education gets worse. Hunger, malnutrition gets worse. Now, what is happening there is, if anybody is paying attention to the news, multiple, about 13 or 14 local governments each,
right,
in Katsina, Zamfara, Sokoto, and a lesser number in Kaduna, are now in communication blackouts. They've knocked out the government has taken down the telcos, claiming that they don't want the bandits to be able to coordinate. But guess what? In the Northeast, the extremists themselves take down the power and the telcos because they don't want the government to coordinate. So,
yeah, different strokes for different folks.
What is happening? The citizens don't know what is happening in the place. How can they? The whole thing is really awkward.
Right.
So, every time.
Right.
You see them digging in deeper, making it worse.
Right.
Going to NECO, to WAEC, to Unity Schools, to whatever, to keep pushing down. Pushing down the mark.
The cutoff mark.
The cutoff mark.
Right.
For a secondary school.
Right.
For university.
Right.
Because as everything gets worse there, secondary school, now I understand that
right.
The cutoff mark for students from some of the states is 2.
Yeah, 2.
It's 2. If you watch President Biden at his town hall yesterday night,
right,
you would have seen him making the case for investment in education.
Right.
He was making the point. He said, any country that underinvests in education will become underdeveloped. Because he's advocating 2 years scholarship.
Right.
For community level college, and the Republicans are saying no. So he's saying, okay, at least accept the proposal for the free preschool.
Right.
That is what we call kindergarten and primary.
Right.
And he underlined, he said, a child that starts kindergarten at the age of 3, compared to a child that starts primary school at the age of 6 or 7,
right,
the child that started kindergarten would have spoken and understood a million more words than the child that starts at the age of 6. Therefore, the child that starts earlier can solve more complex problems. So you can see all these things. Hunger, malnutrition, by the age of 5,
right,
if you are undernourished and and your nutrition is below what it should be, your intellectual engine knocks. You can't understand complex issues. So this thing that people think is an ethnic indicator,
right,
is not. It's an indicator of underdevelopment.
Oh, absolutely. Malnutrition.
Anyway, that's for Northeast and Northwest.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's a lot we can say, but like I said, I mean, John Sherry from Monday Morning, he will give you the contents from the summit. What we are just trying to do is just to summarize.
Right. Right.
You know, what we are just trying to do is just... Sorry, there is one more point I made at the summit, which is that some of the political elites are really, in philosophical terms, no different from the extremists. And I gave the example of former Governor Yerima of Zamfara State, who was racing to introduce an extreme form of Sharia in Zamfara. At the same time, Boko Haram was racing to introduce the same in Northeast. And while Boko Haram was kidnapping girls from villages and things, he got himself a 13-year-old girl. So the extremists will be looking and wondering, well, philosophically, we are on the same path. They are just thinking we are more extreme.
Absolutely. I mean, you have a lawmaker before plenary standing up and saying his wife shows that he's a strong man in the
village. Yeah, and he has 32 children.
Two children. He's a strong
then
man.
They go and set up Hizba as the core of the potential state police, and Hizba and the extremists
have the same philosophical outlook.
Absolutely.
Anyway,
right.
So we talked about the herder-farmer conflict, and I said that is the easiest to solve.
Mm.
There's no need for civil war. All these things people keep saying, yeah, they want to fulanize Nigeria. They want, no! It's under development. The two key points I made were this. Herder-farmer conflict happened in other countries 90 to 100 years ago. In parts of America, Texas, Kansas, all those places, Mexico, Argentina, Brazil, all these countries that have big cattle, you know, that are huge on beef.
Mm.
The same thing happened. The cowboys were herders. They were armed. They rode on horses. They attacked villages. The way they solved that problem was to say the cattle can only move by train or in customized lorries, and they must be ranched. Today, they don't chase each other about on the verge of civil war. And I emphasize, if a state like Lagos facilitates the creation of three or four ranches, one in Ikorodu, one in Epe, one in Badagry, that's where the land is, and says, anybody who is interested, it could be Otedola, it could be anybody, it can be a Yoruba person, it can be an Igbo person, it can be a Hausa person who is settled in Lagos.
Mm.
If those ranches are created and the cattle from there supply the beef, the milk, the cheese, and everything, it will become unnecessary and unproductive to march cattle hundreds of miles from the north to Lagos.
Mm.
That's what they do in Europe.
Mm.
They ranch. They make it unnecessary to transport. And where you have to transport, it is only in trains or lorries. Now, because we don't ranch, we spend about 800 or 900 billion naira every year importing milk and cheese and things like that.
Mm.
Money that could have gone into jobs.
Mm.
So, I mean, you can see all this wahala, the Fulani are coming, they know we won't agree, no cow in our area, we have chicken, we have lizards. What? The elites are failing to apply basic developmental solutions to problems.
Mm. Mm. Mm.
And that was just the summary on the herder-farmer conflict.
Mm.
Look, this thing can be solved in one day. You just make the investments.
Mm.
I mean, you can work out the solution in one day. That's what I mean.
Absolutely.
Then you make the investment over time.
Right, right.
So, I mean, that was the take on that. Quick summary, matter out of the way.
Mm.
Now, I talked about the secessionist movements.
Mm.
So now Kano is in court. So we can't talk about the court case, but we can talk about the background to the issue.
Mm.
Look, if it wasn't Kano, it would be another person. Why? Because the apprentice system that essentially mopped up unemployment in the East is beginning to collapse. Why? Because the economy is collapsing. After the Civil War, and I know, I went to school immediately after the Civil War in government college in Umuahia. That apprentice system soaked up. So a lot of the young men that their education was disrupted by the war had to find jobs to survive because, as you know, between 2 and 3 million people died on the Biafran side. So people had lost their parents, lost their family, couldn't go back to school. So the boys especially, look, if you were to start secondary school when you were 10 or 12, by the time your secondary school restarted, a year or two after the war, if you were lucky, you were 15 to 19. So when I went to boarding school in Umuahia, there were guys in my class in Form 1 that were shaving. And they beat the hell out of you if you misbehaved, for those of us that were children. Now, not all of them came back to school. A lot of them joined the reconstruction efforts because a lot of money was not enough, but a lot of money was put into the reconstruction. So they joined all these building firms and things like that, got jobs, joined businesses, supplying roofing sheets, and so forth.
Mm.
Now, there was oil boom. There was Udoji Awards. The working class and middle class has surplus income.
Mm.
That income was being used to buy fans, TV, cars, and things like that.
Right.
So the surplus income that all these young now businessmen had, many came back to Lagos They used it to import all those items. And people were buying and their businesses grew. And they took in more boys. And when the economy slowed down and people started buying Tokumbo, they diversified into spare parts. I mean, that's the summary of the apprentice system. Now the economy is slowing down. The apprentice system has slowed down. So a lot of the boys that after 6 to 10 years would have gone to open their own shop are sleeping in shops, 10, 20 of them. So, of course, they are unhappy. It's the economy that is causing the problem, but also the federal system in Nigeria is being run like a unitary state. So, simple economic solutions like electricity, the Enugu distribution, the EDBC, is the only DISCO supplying the 5 southeastern states. It's undersupplied. Area market in Aba spends billions every month on diesel and petrol, which if they had grid power, their industrial output would quadruple. A lot of the unemployment would be sucked up. I'm just trying to give one or two solutions. Of course, the issues are more complex than this.
Absolutely.
But it shows you how issues can be resolved rather than sending soldiers to the place and, you know, calling people, you know, dots in a circle, you know, they won't get anywhere, just making the matters worse. So, I mean, in that kind of economic circumstances, especially one in which a federal country is being run like a unitary state, and even things like electricity, are not, states are not allowed to work and generate on the, Nigeria is possibly the only federal country on this planet where the electricity is held at the center. Go to US, go to Brazil, go to Germany, go to other places. If every state in Nigeria generates 2,000 or 3,000 megawatts, we'll be at 36,000. We need 200,000 for over 200 million people. We're at 5,000.
And that's the irony.
I mean, you can see how the insecurity is just fueled by, you know, policy making that sometimes doesn't make sense. It's not clear. People know what they are doing. Look, on this Herder Farmer conflict, one of the worst days in my life was watching the Minister of Transport on channels with Shane Oki, and he was asking him, so this cattle problem, how is your ministry? And he said, what is my business with cow? Your business with cow is that your counterparts in other countries are the ones designing the transport policy of the rail and the lorries lifting the cow. That's your business with the cow. So you can see how, you know, all round underdevelopment, poor policy making, a lot of things just contribute to make the matters worse. And the solution often is to just send in, you know, soldiers, security, many of whom don't understand the complexity of the issue of who support the troops.
So, Rotimi, before we go on the break, you know, we've looked at these problems like with surgical precision, moving from where it's more troubling and come down to the east. And then the southwest also has problems because many of the people who have been caught in the crossfire and in harm's way have found their way to the southwest. And then there are also problems which are indigenous also to the southwest. So maybe you can touch on that before we go on the break.
Well, I mean, the Southwest, the Igbo, look, you know, the biggest absurdity was, you know, Igbo's cats being arrested because he's thought to have turned into one of them, you know, and the cats were taken and put somewhere and they were, you know, watch those cats. One of them is going to change back. I mean, this is the kind of level of discourse that we're having. Of course, until he was nabbed in Benin Republic, and the government is gloating over it. Igbo is not as big a threat to the country. The biggest threat is underdevelopment. Look, what is driving the agitation in Southwest essentially is frustration with the unitary system of government. Because if a lot of things are decentralized, you know, I gave the example of electricity. If Lagos has 20,000 megawatts of electricity for the 20 million people, where it should be, all this high youth unemployment and everything, you know, will be seriously reduced. I'm not saying that there won't be people who say that they want to do a Oduduwa Republic, but you can see those people supporting Igbo. They are artisans, mechanics, vulcanizers, you know, people from his background. There are now tens of thousands of them. So when you say they are out of school children in Lagos, so let us say, for instance, that it is 15 to 20% of the population. Don't forget, the population is 20 million. So the percentage is small. The absolute number is high.
Yes.
And they are being soaked up by things like the transport sector, the agberos and so forth, which without, if Lagos was not a small, densely populated state with a huge transport sector, many of those agberos would be potential bandits. And then we would have seen real problems. What we are seeing now is an agitation at Ojota Park, you know, and you see senior security officials going there to chase people carrying placards. Essentially making the matter worse. Look, if people gather in that car park and make speeches, and if they are unfortunate and reinforced, they will go. I mean, the truth is, power is not going to be seized at Ojota. And I explained at the summit, if Ojukwu was able to do it is because Ojukwu was a sitting military governor in a military dictatorship where he already had control of a region. So if people from his region were being killed, and as a graduate of history from Oxford, he could interpret the thing and just say, well, if the country cannot look after our people, then we are going. That's not the kind of scenario that exists today. So the government is overhyping, raising tension, you know, can we go? And meanwhile, I guarantee you that when the collapse of the country starts, and it has started, because communities and local governments in Borno, Yobe, Katsina, Zamfara have collapsed. Those states are failed states. That's where the real problem is. And I made the point. Countries don't collapse at a time. Countries collapse community by community. Local government by local government. When a cluster of local governments fail, the state where they are in will fail.
So,
and then it will spread to the other states.
So, Rotimi, let's take this break now. And once we come back, we can have a look at... well, we can open the phone lines. We can get the people into the square.
Yes. I mean, I think we have summarized the presentation.
The reminder can be for the questions and comments, I guess, that people would throw in either from WhatsApp or on, through the phone lines. And not to forget social media too. 99.3 Nigeria Info, Public Square. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Public Square.
All right, welcome back. And let's do this very quickly. We have just about 11 minutes to go. I'm going to dedicate that to the audience to join in the conversation very quickly. The number to call, 0700-993-993-993. And then you can call female lines or female callers only, 01465-7190. Again, 01465-7190. And WhatsApp, 0809-597-5805. Again, 0809-597-5805. So we'll be alternating WhatsApp, phone lines, and social media at Nigeria Info FM at Public Square NG. Those of you who won the Nigeria at 60 series, your books are still waiting for you. So if you know you won the last 2 weeks, we had altogether 10. I know about 2-3 people have come pick up theirs. Find your way to your office next week and pick up at... the reception. Okay, so let's go. Hello and good evening.
Hello.
Okay. Just hold on a second. Rotimi, are you still there?
Yes, I'm with you.
Okay. Right. Hello and good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Great to have you join us. What's your name, please, and where are you calling from?
Yes, this is Mr. Peter. I'm calling you from Yaba.
All right, Mr. Peter, let's do this in 1 minute. Go ahead.
All right. Yes, I want to thank you so much to Mr. Sankore As usual, he has never failed to impress me with his intelligent and factual analysis.
Mm. Mm.
But there's a particular area I want him to, you know, put a little more emphasis on.
Mm.
Niger Republic in the north of our neighbors to the north is one of the poorest countries in the world.
Mm.
And yet, it has the highest population. According to some UN agencies, 7.8 children per woman.
Hmm.
Now, over 40%
of these... talking about fertility, fertility, not population.
Yeah, fertility rate.
Hello?
Yes, you're talking about fertility rate.
Yes.
Go ahead, please. Quickly.
Yes, the birth rate.
Right.
So now, 40% or more of these people are migrating to northern Nigeria. And once they stay there for 6 months to acclimatize, they all are pushed down to the south of Nigeria.
Hmm.
And when they come, they assume Nigerian citizenship.
Hmm.
So they are all over the place. And the federal government appears not to have noticed, and they are not doing anything about it.
Hmm.
So I want Mr. Sankore to elaborate on it a little.
All right.
Is bad. And nobody is, taking note of it.
Thank you very much. You've taken note of it, and we've taken note of it also, too, in the past. Hello and good evening.
Hello, good evening, sir.
Great to have you join us. What's your name, please, and where are you calling from?
My name is Godwin Yetim.
Godwin, please go ahead.
Yeah, I listened to what Ruth Mee just said now. I think what you said is what we are facing right now in Nigeria, but I'm hoping that it won't get out of hand because the rate of what is going on now is really unexplainable. That's my... I want to ask, though. I won a book with you guys, although I was there a week ago.
Oh, okay. So now that you're back, I'm sure you can come pick up.
I'm not in town now, but I should be back maybe before next weekend. I don't know if I can come and pick it.
Oh, sure. Anytime you come, your book is waiting for you. Hello and good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Great to have you join us. Your name, please, and where are you calling from?
My name is Jay. I'm calling from Chevron Axis.
All right, Jane. Please go ahead.
Mr. Rotim, I wanted to thank him for his analysis, but I think his analysis makes it clear why the agitation in the southeast is happening. And let me quickly explain. The North have the highest population. They've been receiving, you know, greater share of the national wealth because of their population size.
Mm.
They refuse to develop themselves.
Mm.
Now, we are now, the entire country is suffering because of the development they didn't do. So you can understand why the Easterners will want to separate from the North.
Mm.
It's not even personal. It's because of statistics, as Mr. Arotimi has presented.
Mm.
If we are given a share of money to develop our different parts, the East develops theirs in education. Every girl child is educated. No girl child is allowed to marry at 18. They are marrying at 20, 21, 22. They not use their own resources for the feudalism. Only the rich use the money, and the rest are not allowed to be educated. When insurgency starts, then the whole Nigeria inherits the problem. So how do we expect the eastern part of Nigeria to grow when the North brings them down? Jam score is lowered to favor the North. Civil service standards is lowered to make sure that the North enters into those capacity. At least military, navy, every aspect standard is brought down so that the North is not disenfranchised. So the East has to stop growing so that the North can catch up.
All right, Jane.
It's unfair what this country is, and this is the reason why the agitation in the southeast may not stop.
Thank you very much, Jane. Sure, if we respond to all of this, we can find 2 minutes at the end. I'll take in at least two more calls. I hope we can go through. Kindly switch off the device you're listening with so we don't get the feedback.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good evening. Your name, please, and where are you calling?
My name is Daniel. I'm calling from Festac.
Daniel, please go ahead.
I want to collaborate with the last two callers, what they were trying to point out about them acclimatizing to the south. Because at the end of the day, what you're saying, I would like to collaborate on that. Like in my street now, most of the houses, there, you have like in the guard, like a security matter is there. Like if there are 15 of them that are there, 10 of them are from the gym. Because there was a video that Libros posted like maybe like 2 weeks ago about government, one of the bandits that are encouraging
government, the government was encouraging the bandits.
Mm.
I went to give one of them the video to translate for me.
Mm.
He told me that he doesn't hear Hausa,
mm.
that they have their own language in here. And to me, I was shocked because all of us look at them as Hausa Fulani. So, and then, because there is underdevelopment there, everybody is shifting down to the southern Nigeria.
Mm.
And then at the end of the day, Yeah, they were on the keg of gunpowder.
All right, it's fascinating how people end up with only God can save us. Rotimi, we're pressed for time, and I'm sure you want to quickly respond. Immigration has found its way in discussion, but maybe we can address quickly.
The issues are more complex than can be entirely explained.
Mm.
In 2 minutes, 30 minutes, or 1 hour. What I tried to do was talk about the headline issues. You can see a problem. A lot of people frame the underdevelopment as a North-South conflict, which it is not. A lot of people assume, you know, the North are dominating the South. Which not? Is it the majority of the 93 million living in extreme poverty that are dominating you? Or is it, are people talking? So in the North is essentially feudal in nature, which means the elites run it based on consensus amongst themselves and based on a lot of inequality. In the North. So sometimes they frame it as they are fighting the South on behalf of the Northern ordinary people that they are oppressing, which then confuses the issue for a lot of people. But essentially, there are two things causing the insecurity in Nigeria. One is the underdevelopment caused by different factors and different issues in the different geopolitical zones.
Right.
The second is, and this is what more people catch on to, that in a federal country,
right,
if you run it as a unitary state from the center
right.
and hold on to everything,
right,
then you increase the pressure of people saying, if we go our way, we will do better. And then people conflate all these things. Maybe what we'll try and do is to break it down sort of sector by sector over time.
Right, right.
I mean, as for the problem in Niger, there's nothing anybody can do except the federal government and the state bordering Niger. I mean, it's a porous border. That's the long and short of it.
Non-existent border even in some cases.
You know?
Yeah.
So, well, I'm afraid that's really all we can say within the short time available. But like I said, on Monday, I think Sheriff will give you more of the content of the Security Summit.
Right.
He did last Monday with another of the speakers.
Right.
On Monday, it may be my turn. It may be the turn of another person.
Right.
But if you are still on Twitter, I mean, don't forget, the government says they are not prosecuting anybody for using Twitter because there is no law to back it up.
Right.
So if you are still on Twitter
and
you follow me at Rotimi Sankore, for Monday we will put clips. In fact, there is just one clip from that summit up now.
Right.
For Monday we will put up more.
Right.
But the whole video is up on Facebook Live.
Right.
Nigeria Info FM. All the speakers.
Very true.
In fact, a lot of the events are there.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, thank you very much. And everyone, thank you very much for calling. Those who send the messages on social media, on WhatsApp, thank you very much. We'll see all of the messages. It was great seeing you guys also throughout the summit, physically.
Yes.
a lot of people we have not seen.
Lots of our listeners.
I mean, it was really great. I saw a man walked up to me and shouted, "I'm Pastor Ladikpo." And I gladly announced his name to people, and everybody rushed after him. "Oh, Pastor Ladikpo, Pastor Ladikpo." All right. We're good.
Well, don't forget to join us next Friday at 4 p.m.
Right. All right. See you guys. We have the news at the top of the hour, and then Sammy and Ifeanyi will be back in here with music and moments. Bye-bye.